Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
How's it going, everyone? I'm Kevin Zimmerman. Kellen Olson's beside me. This is the Empire of the Suns podcast. It's Saturday. We just got back from the Phoenix Suns' open practice, which, nicely enough, was actually a scrimmage. It was a little rough around the edges, which we'll get into that a little bit later. Kellen just spent all week in Flagstaff with the Suns in training camp. How was that? Get out of the heat a little?
Yeah, that was great. Going from 70 degrees like throughout the time the sun is up, basically, instead of 105, 110 degrees. Looks like it's going to cool down here pretty soon, too. So I timed it well. It was fun. There's only so much you can get out of training camp. And what I mean by that is you can talk about stuff looking forward to the season, but all guys are going to say is, like, right now we're getting down learning and terminology and offensive sets, defensive sets, what this means, what that means, because that's actually what they're doing. Basically, they did non-contact drills in the morning, non-contact practice in the morning, and then they had contact practice later in the afternoon where they would run stuff against each other. So they weren't even facing each other. They were facing just coaches in the morning, and that was when we talked to them. So that's all they would talk about, really. And then we would ask about the night before, and it sounds like even the contact stuff was just more of, like, we're going to come up against each other, but this is still primarily about learning. And the thing that's easy to forget with all this transition and all the player movement is this is a new year for everyone. This is first-year head coach Kokoschko, but it's also, what it also is a bunch of players, not a bunch of players, every player learning that system, every player getting familiar with playing with each other as well. This is not a group of 9 to 10 guys who all played with each other last year. How many guys are we actually working with from the rotation last year that were in the rotation last year consistently? We have
Book. Do you count Shaq?
No. Book, Jackson, Warren, Bender. Chandler, and Bender. But Chandler and Bender don't figure to play prominent roles. Like, they're backups. So the only actual real guys who played, there were three of them. So there's a lot of transition going on, and that was the main theme in Flagstaff.
I think at this point last year or around this time, we were at the Josh Jackson had that weird quote where they were trying to do positionless basketball, and he was like, I didn't know who to guard. So
he also had the quote where he said, Earl Watson was talking about the quote, or what Jackson said, and Jackson said, Watson said, like, you got to keep going and, like, keep running full speed. And Josh's like, but what if I keep falling down? And then Watson just said, you got to keep going through that. And that kind of was an alarming quote for a rookie who you want to play in a, like, contained, you want him to play within himself, not push things too hard. And that was kind of a preview of, yeah, what you were saying.
I wrote about that this past week where it was like, yeah, we should have seen the signs. Like, there was those few things, and then he just got handed the starting power forward job, and then he's guarding Blake Griffin to start the third game of the year, and that went, if you remember, very badly, because Blake Griffin weighs 50 pounds more than him, and he was a rookie. So this year, we just want to say, you hope that the Suns are learning this new system, and I just went through kind of the same thing with the Cardinals, where you go through training camp and it's a new coach and you don't really know what to expect. And that's obviously gone pretty poorly. So this is a wait and see thing, which is why we're excited for the preseason. Were there any other training camp takeaways? The point guard situation they wouldn't talk about. They're just keeping that under wraps as a competition. What else did you learn or glean?
I mean, there wasn't really a lot, because there's the wing thing you can talk about for a sec.
Yeah, just the use of them, or?
Well, it's just,
we don't know how they're
we don't know how they're going to use them. They wouldn't say how they're going to use them. He wouldn't say who would play where. The only example we got was like TJ playing the four, and Igor is a guy who will talk X's and O's with you, but it was just that type of week. So to me, I mean, I think an interesting angle is to kind of look at what you were just talking about and saying, what are the signs that we should maybe be looking at and reacting to more than we normally would? And I think I would say that he just said we left the open practice before Igor talked, but Evan Sidery tweeted that he said they're treating the preseason like training camp still, and maybe these are signs that this is a very young team picking up a lot of things at once while learning to play with each other, and maybe this is a sign, especially without Booker potentially to start the first couple of games, that they are going to struggle, and this is going to be quite the process for the first 10-15 games.
DeAndre Ayton said something kind of interesting that was just, it's good. It's the same thing that Igor's talked about with him specifically was they just need to play defense. And I think the scrimmage today we saw, it was, okay, last year's scrimmage that I went to was just like chaotic. They were just telling them to run their butts off. And that ended up being a sign that all they wanted to do was play small ball and outrun people, which was obviously terrible. And these practices and scrimmages, again, are very, like, basically pick up and occasionally they'll call sets. And we saw some good sets today where you just see all the motion and the action. But defensively, again, it's hard to tell, but there was pretty good effort. A lot of missed shots that weren't necessarily because of the defense. So, yeah, it's... I'm still like, these type of things, I'm just like, I just want to see him against another team.
Yeah, and even the preseason, it's like, that leads to us wanting to overreact to the preseason and what we see, and even then it's still preseason, and it's the preseason in which they're calling it a training camp. So there's not a lot to really react to. I think the only things you can really gain from preseason are, I remember in the first preseason game, Hornacek was actually staggering Bledsoe and Knight that year when Knight, the first full year Knight was there, and he was staggering them, and he wasn't doing that at the end of this last season, and it was like, oh, he's going to stagger them this year. And this is like when we see the scrimmage and we see Cannon starting with Jackson, Ayton, Anderson, and Ariza, it's like, oh, that's probably the starting lineup right there for now. Because that was the way the scrimmage lined up. And then seeing things like Bender playing the five, Holmes and Chandler were the centers on that other team, but there was a moment where Holmes and Chandler, neither of them were playing, and Bender closed the scrimmage against Ayton playing the five. It's like, okay, so Bender could play the five in some scenarios. Like, that's the type of stuff you can pick up on in this specific setting. But other than that, I don't really think there's a lot to take away with it, and we can kind of just talk about the fact that there's not really an answer at point guard still.
So on the first teams, there was just Shaq and Cannon were facing off, which means, yeah, the rookies, I think, Igor's treating them like rookies. They're coming off the bench. I don't think they're going to start. We're still at that point. And the other thing that kind of stuck out was just they do really want that power forward slot to be a floor spacer, because it was Bender and Anderson facing off. TJ was, I think, at the four a little bit today.
He spent a good amount of time there. Yeah.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting. What else?
As far as the scrimmage goes, I think that's like really the only thing that stood out for me was like little rotation stuff here and there. I tweeted out a clip where there was a designed play for Ayton to get a lob where it's typical, like he sets a screen at the top of the key, and then there's a down screen waiting for him at the elbow, and then he rolls and gets a lob. That was covered, so then the offense stopped for like half a second, and then Josh Jackson made a cut from the weak side into the middle. He caught the ball at like the free throw line. Ayton was still on the baseline from the previous lob and then got another lob. And that's the type of stuff where eventually, Igor's offense, that's what it's going to be. There are going to be several options, several misdirections, and just because this lob didn't work doesn't mean the lob's not there 2 seconds later from a different angle. One thing that I noticed, and Evan tweeted this, was Jackson and Reed were bringing up the ball. It wasn't like get it to the point guard. Guys
Bender
were bringing
too
up the ball.
Did a little bit, yeah.
Bender did too, but the key is not only avoiding like taking a quick shot when it's not there, but getting into the offense immediately. Bender dribbled it out and then waited at the wing of the 3-point line for like 2 seconds and then got it to a point guard. I think that's something where you need to start the offensive flow more.
Yeah.
And then I think with the whole misdirections thing, I think that's something where Ariza, Brennan tweeted this, Ariza was keeping the ball moving a lot. He was not looking to shoot every single time, and that's something where in Houston he catches the ball on the perimeter with space, he's going to shoot immediately. That's something where Igor's offense can take advantage of teams falling asleep because they're used to like, oh, okay, this is the one where you guys run around for 7 straight seconds and nothing really happens. That's where you get misdirections, backdoor cuts, some guys actually shooting or driving, and that's like the stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, stage 5. And they're barely at stage 1 of the offense right now, which is, again, what I come back to is like this is probably going to take a while for them to get down, especially because they're so young and they're relying on young players so much.
That one play you did tweet out was a good example of that's good that they can pick it up and they get through like the second or third progression of something's not working, but they still understood it where there's still going to be something at the end where Ayton did catch the lob. But yeah, the stuff that was really rough today was just when plays broke down or you have a fast break, how do you get into the offense? How do you keep it flowing and keep the defense off balance, which we saw them hesitate. They are still thinking, I think, through things. And that's, again, that's more learning his philosophy when there's not a play call, when there's not time for a play call. What are you going to do? And that's the challenge for a young team. Do you want to talk about preseason? I mean, I think that kind of goes into everything we want to see. I want to see them develop more chemistry together on offense.
Yeah, and not to plug my own stuff, but I'm actually like going back and watching some of the videos now, and there's a sequence where it's a dribble handoff at the top of the key. Okobo is moving to the right. King is coming to the left to get the ball. And then the dribble handoff goes from King at the top to Reed, who is on the left wing. And then when Reed gets the dribble handoff, Anderson, to keep the movement going, goes from the left corner to the left wing. And now him and King are standing at the left wing. And King is standing there for like a second and a half. And then Anderson is like, move over there. Move to the corner. And that's something where that half second can't really go there.
Yeah.
So Reed comes off the dribble handoff, to, like gets cut off at the elbow by Bridges. But he immediately resets because Ayton comes up for a pick, and that creates the pocket pass for a mid-range jumper for Ayton. And then because there was a double collapse on Reed because he was going to the basket off a strong screen, Ayton also had the pass to Anderson, who is now on the left wing, because Bender had to come down and help. And that's where eventually that's moving super crisp, and the pass to Anderson is something Ayton recognizes. And Reed already making that pocket pass and Ayton already going up there for the screen. It's like step. It's like you're loading a percentile, like you're installing the offense, actually.
Yeah.
Like it's a computer file. And that's like they're at like 13% right now of 100. And the stuff where it's like Anderson gets the ball and then he shoots it, that's like 50% of the way there. And it just keeps kind of moving in that general way, where even if you see things going well, there's still so much fine tuning to go. One thing I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to ask Igor about this, but it didn't really fit my story too much, and I thought it was something I would ask him later on in the season once they're established more. Joe Ingles was a guy in Utah last year who averaged nearly 5 assists a game and played a real playmaking role within Igor's offense and took advantage of that offense more specifically. It's not like they looked at Ingles, I think, and said, yeah, you're going to be the playmaker in this. It's kind of like Ingles was just in the offense and knew when to make the passes.
Yeah.
Who's the guy you see outside of the point guard position who can do that the most? Because I think Josh is the automatic answer, but I come to guys like even Dragan's not going to play that much, but I come to guys like even like DeAndre, and I go to guys like Mikkel, where TJ, I think, to an extent, could average like a career high in assists too in this offense.
Yeah.
So is there anyone that stands out to you in particular?
Honestly, it's going to be Trevor for me.
Oh,
and
okay.
He's
That's
not a,
good a one.
Great passer, but you mentioned it earlier. If he's like your starting small forward, then he's going to be that guy who he has enough handling ability where, you know, he catches on the move, defense is moving, and he's going to be able to make basic passes because of the offense, where it's is Joel Ingles type. But Joel Ingles is a really good passer, and your question's really good because the Suns don't have that guy. Like,
yeah,
that's the biggest thing. Like, Booker's to some extent, but Booker's going to be the guy with the ball who's like that secondary ball handler who can make those plays. And yeah, that's the scary thing about Josh Jackson too, is like, he's still searching for his role and what shots he should take. And especially in the mid range, like, if he doesn't have a path to the bucket, what's his role? What's his identity? He could be that guy, but I think he has a long way to go as well. So yeah. Bender actually even had a nice pass off secondary action to Ayton today. So that's interesting. And then it really stood out of things that can stand out when Ryan Anderson set a screen today on Shaq Harrison. Like, if you want to use the phrase catching a body, he literally did that because Shaq just died on his screen. And Shaq's like one of those guys who's going to play hard defense, but he just got caught. And I was like, oh, this is going to be helpful. I haven't seen anyone do this in a long time in a Suns uniform.
Someone tweeted at you and said the last great screen set in Phoenix was Kurt Thomas, which is like 100 million percent accurate. Like, that is
dead on. That was his job.
Yep.
But yeah, I need to look at that more. I never thought that much about Ryan Anderson setting good screens, but that stood out to me.
So I asked that question just because I was watching Josh in particular today, and he had like two or three different times where, like I said, he made that cut on the weak side and then found DeAndre quickly for the lob. There was another time where he ran a two-man game with DeAndre, and I look at, it's not really guys with point forward skills, but just more so guys who can quickly adapt within an offense and make a play within 3 to 4 seconds.
Yeah.
It's anywhere from a half second to a second to like 4 to 5 seconds. So like, okay, Josh is going to run. There's 14 seconds left now. Josh is going to run a two-man game with DeAndre, or it's as simple as DeAndre makes a cut, takes one dribble, pass, lob. And those are the plays where I'm going to be looking out for the guys in the preseason. I think Davon and Josh in the scrimmage were the two guys to me that stood out the most in terms of making that play. And I think that's going to be the key to, I'm really pissed at myself for not thinking of this type of point in particular for the thing I wrote this morning on ArizonaSports.com. But I think to me, that's the thing I'm going to be watching for in the preseason the most is point guard as well, because Ellie, it was a scrimmage. I'm not reacting to it, but I'm just saying Ellie was a guy who didn't really make any plays in that, and that's the type of thing where you have the ball in your hands a lot, you're supposed to be one of the creative guys, and Devin obviously is going to come in and be the absolute best playmaker in the system, but it's just everyone touches that you see it. And you realize like Ryan Anderson could average 3 assists in this system just because everyone touches the ball so much. There are opportunities to make passes. He had a quick entry pass he tried to make to DeAndre Ayton, and I think that and how often Ayton is actually established in the post were two things where the scrimmage I took mental notes of. Okay, well, now I want to watch for this in the preseason is like how often do they get Ayton established in the post, because it slows down the offense by default.
Yeah.
And then how many guys are going to take advantage of the playmaking opportunities? Because McDonough mentioned on media day, Kokoshkov has mentioned it throughout the week, we want to be creative with our wings, but it's on them to be creative with those opportunities.
Yeah. That's a good way to sum it up. Do you want to talk about Jimmy Butler stuff? Let's talk about Jimmy Butler stuff. It might involve the Suns, it might not. So, context, Jimmy Butler wants out of Minnesota. He gets paid a lot, and the Suns are one of those teams that have contracts to trade that can make a three-team deal work. For example, if we go by, is it the latest where Jimmy to the Rockets, the Rockets want Jimmy, was kind of on the radar at the end of this week. So I actually trade machine just to see how the money works. You could have a three-team deal where the Rockets trade Eric Gordon to the Timberwolves and the Suns trade TJ Warren to the Timberwolves. Jimmy goes to the Rockets and then the Suns take a Jeff Teague. They get their point guard and they take on, I think it's like a $3 million Nene contract, and that's straight up works. Maybe there are draft picks in that, whatever. That's where we, like, that's not a terrible haul if you're, if you put yourself in the mind of Tom Thibodeau and say, keep that team kind of competitive, where you get a wing, you get a good scoring two guard. I guess you have point guards. Tyus Jones and Derrick Rose can do that.
This is, this whole situation could be a humongous blessing for the Suns, because if the Clippers get involved, they could be, the Suns could provide an extra asset on either side and get Patrick Beverley back. Ditto for Tyus Jones in Minnesota. I don't really sense any other teams, like Miami doesn't really have that extra guard. Of course, the Minnesota Miami thing is Jeff Teague and Goran Dragic. That got blown out of proportion. Woj was doing a rare Woj thing where he wasn't actually reporting, but he was like, I think as someone who always speaks for Woj on things, I'll say, I think he kind of got bored by the lack of buzz and the lack of, not reporting, but just like the lack of stuff that was out there. And he was just speculating, like, if there's a three-team deal out there, Phoenix needs a point guard. Let's say Goran Dragic goes to Minnesota, then that would leave Jeff Teague open. Because it's like, if Jimmy Butler goes to Miami, how does Miami give the assets back? And it's like, they don't want to give up Josh Richardson, probably. They probably don't want to, like, they're okay with giving up one or maybe both of Justice Winslow and Bam Adebayo. But what's, like, the win now piece back? And it's like, oh, it's Goran Dragic, but then they'd have to get rid of Jeff Teague. And that was just the kind of way he was thinking, in my opinion. He wasn't even actually reporting, and then he came out and later said, like,
I think it was third team. Like, it could have been from Miami being like, we want this to happen. Someone, Woj, tell the Timberwolves to make this happen, and the Suns would maybe be interested. Because, like, he said it was sources, so.
And then he reported that there haven't been any conversations about this, but this is just,
and that probably came from the Suns.
One front office or another front office has speculated. But the Suns can obviously get in here, and they can find their point guard in this kind of way. But
teams also want to look at the Suns, like, Miami doesn't have much for interesting stuff to trade. So say the Suns really want someone, they can throw in a draft pick. Like, that's where that is. Like, they have good contracts and assets, so that's just why they're automatically in every single blockbuster on the periphery.
Let's play a game to end this. Let's play an asset game where let's assume it is an expiring guy. So let's assume it's the Spencer Dinwiddie, Corey Joseph, Patrick Beverley type of point guard, where this is a stopgap. It's for a year or two. It's someone that is,
so they can sign Ricky Rubio.
So it is
summer.
So it is someone that is good, but they are not great, and they are maybe not even that good. How high on the asset ladder are you willing to climb to give something up? With the season on October 17th, and today is September 29th, it's going to be 16 days from Monday is going to be opening night, so that is 2 weeks from Wednesday. We are away from the opening season. So with that timeline in mind, would you give up the Milwaukee pick for one of those point guards?
Yeesh. Not Beverly. I would say maybe Corey Joseph. But
yeah, context here, it matters a lot, but just the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Is Corey Joseph is better than, like, Isaiah Cannon, but how much better? Like,
I think he's much better.
Yeah.
Corey Joseph is, like, he can start on a bad team, which is the Suns.
Yeah. Is he, like, does he fit this team, though? Does that matter? He's a good defender. I don't really know how great off the bounce he is. He's fine.
Here is how I look at it. I would give up the Milwaukee pick for one of those guys because I don't think the Milwaukee pick really matters that much, if we're being honest. Okay, it's a 12-13 pick in 2020 or 2021 or whatever. Like, that's the best. What's the best case scenario for that pick right now is that it right now, it can land, I guess, if Milwaukee misses the playoffs with one of the six or seven best players in the NBA.
I would
a decent supporting cast.
I would just hedge and say, all right, do you want to go into the season and hope for, like, a team to get desperate where it's just like, all right, we'll take a second round pick for one for this point guard. Like, what if Giannis got hurt or something, and then suddenly that draft pick changes? Like, what?
Top three protected this year, 17 to 30 protected. So it can land between 4 and 16 this year. It can land 8 through 30 in 2020, and then it's unprotected in 2021. So there is a... Yeah, I mean, it's essentially like gambling on Giannis, like, getting hurt, which...
Yeah.
Getting hurt for a significant amount of time, like him missing like 3 months at least of the season. He would have to miss at least 60% of the season for them to regret that pick, which for me would be a landing in the top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, where, I'm sorry, but if this pick lands at like 12 and people are upset, where does that guy go on this team?
Right.
Is he a point guard? Like, and even then, like, if Elia Cobart, D'Anthony Melton looks good, my whole point on this pick is that
they have their own pick, yeah. Anyway.
In 2020, it's top seven protected. Let's say it lands at 9. I don't give a crap about the pick if DeAndre and Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson are all good. None of this really actually matters as long as the core is good. And I think some of that has to do with them getting off on the right foot here and having a real point guard.
Yeah.
So the Suns put themselves in the situation. I am not saying that this is the Suns should do this. I'm just saying what would I believe is the right thing to do in this situation. That's different than who won, who lost this trade, because I think we can agree the Suns are going to lose this trade probably, whatever it is. I would go with the Milwaukee pick for one of those point guards. I would do it. Would you give up Dragan Bender for one of these guys?
Nah, probably not, just because I think he's... There's promising stuff.
I need at least another year with him.
Give me one more year.
I need at least another year. And especially it could be this year to where he doesn't really play that much. But I need at least another year because Ryan Anderson is a stopgap and you don't have anything else behind that right now.
Yeah. Have Dragan learn under Ryan Anderson. Like that's what he is. And he can probably be a plus defender on top of it. But to your point, I think the Suns are like stuck in between that Milwaukee pick, somewhere between there and a second round pick. Like, they don't want to give it up. They don't feel like they have to, but when do they feel like they really need to? And when you go into the season, do you think...
I bring up those two because I think those are the two assets where they can afford to give them up and still be fine. If they give up Mikal or Josh or one of those guys, like, that's obviously like a huge, like, there is a shift of the tectonic plates of the Suns franchise if they give up one of those guys. If they give up their own pick this year, like, that's a pretty big deal. But if they give up the Milwaukee pick or Bender, it's kind of like, Bender wasn't going to play that much this year anyway. It goes back to
You're paying Bledsoe's replacement.
And it goes back to my original point, which is Bender doesn't really matter as long as the other four young guys are good. He doesn't really matter all that much. He's just a nice bonus. But what we're saying is that we believe that bonus could be worthwhile.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they don't want to give up the Milwaukee pick for this, which I understand. But you dug your own hole, fellas. You did this to yourself. And it's a lot, in my opinion, there's a big difference between the Booker injury, like, context of that matters to me.
Yeah.
It does. And even with him back, it still matters. All right, so how many games can the Suns win if this is the point guard rotation to end this? Can they win 30 with this?
I think they can get to 30.
Let's say Aiden is one of the two, three best rookies in the league. Booker is nearly like at the point where he's like an actual snub for the All-Star team. I thought he was last year, but that was a hot take. But he's actually a snub this year.
Okay.
Jackson is average, like let's just say Jackson, Bridges, Warren, Ariza, all those guys, you get the average output.
Yeah.
Ayton's really good. Booker's really good.
And they play a full season. I'll give them 30 on the button, which is like taking this slight over on, yeah.
My answer to this was, whoa, the Raptors are starting CJ Miles as their four. Speaking of small ball, Toronto going for it. Yeah.
Fuck Nick.
Matt Moore tweeted that. He's like, Miles who? Like Miles Bridges? They got Miles Bridges? Nope, CJ Miles they're starting, so... Small ball is well underway, folks. When someone asked me about this, or we were talking about just like if this is actually the team the entire season, I'd say the only way this is possible is if Kokoschkov is a top 10 coach in the league right now, and DeAndre Ayton is one of the three or four best rookies in the league.
Yeah.
And that's not completely unrealistic. But
we'll see.
One of those is not the case, then I think they are going to, like, the gap is immense. I think, like, they could really, really struggle and be one of the 2 to 3 worst teams in the league.
They're going to have to play good defense, man.
They're going to have to play good defense because, oh yeah, they play in the West.
Yeah.
And people say that's...
That's like why I'm not completely... I actually like the guys they have defensively at point guard, so...
Yeah, and if they were in the East, I think we would be more upset that they're not getting a point guard because it would actually be a real opportunity to like win like a lot of games. Like,
yeah.
Potentially even 40 in the East, but... They are not in the East. They are in the West. Anything else on preseason while you're going forward? But because we have games on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. For those of you that are not informed, they play the Kings on Monday at home. They play the New Zealand Breakers, I believe is their name, on Wednesday at home. And then on Friday, I actually don't know the opponent, but they play at home again.
Is it Portland or Utah?
It's one of those.
One of those.
And then they go on the road for two games the week after, and then the start of the season the week after that.
I just want to see some games against opponents. I'm excited.
We will have that for our next podcast.
Thank you for listening. As always, we will have that for our next podcast.
And a new point guard, please.